Hello and welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast. Every week, your Extra Movie Butter boys are here to supply you with our thoughts and opinions on the box office, movie news, our personal favorites, which is our second segment, our favorite segment, and of course, the weekly movie review. This week, we are reviewing Land of Bad, the new Russell Crowe, Liam Hemsworth war movie, but we'll cover that in the third segment. But of course, I do need to say hello to my two co-hosts, JT, Benny. Let's see which of you talks first.
Me. I beat you. In my defense, Benny was eating something, I believe. So I had the upper hand on that one.
I apologize. It was a mint Oreo and it was glorious. Hello, everybody.
There's mint Oreos?
There is a mint Oreo, yes.
Yes, I have seen them in the wild.
Wow. The future is here, ladies and gentlemen. And it looks glorious. Well, of course, let's kick off with our box office breakdown from this past weekend. Bob Marley, One Love, once again, taking the number one spot with $13.5 million. Demon Slayer came in at number two with $11.4 million. Number three is Ordinary Angels, the new Hilary Swank movie, debuted at number three with $6.1 million. Madam Web knocked down to fourth place, $6 million. Migration, still bringing in money, hanging in at number five. Six, Argyle, knocked down to sixth place with $2.8 million. Wonka, still bringing in money, $2.4 million, $214 million domestic. I know I mention that every week, but man, that movie's got some legs. Drive Away Dolls, the new Coen Brothers movie, debuted at number eight with $2.4 million. The Beekeeper is protecting the hive at number nine with $1.9 million. The Chosen, still hanging in there. Episodes four through six at number 10 with $1.8 million. And the movie we are reviewing this week came in at the number 12 spot with $982,000. A lot of numbers, lots to talk about. JT, kick us off.
Man, hearing those numbers and those films, it really just comes down to me. It's like how scarce the box office is right now. Like Dune could not be coming any sooner. The box office needs a rejuvenation. It needs something that's exciting, that's going to bring people into theaters. Now, AMC Theaters just announced they've recorded three brand new Nicole Kidman intros. And I feel like that's going to get people's butt in seats. I wish they would have done it. I guess they are doing it at the same time as Dune. So I guess they paired it with Dune. So I don't know what the three new variations of the Nicole Kidman intro AMC is going to be, but I might go just to see what it is. I want to see all three of them. I'm really curious about that. I was lucky enough out of three of us to go see Dune 2 early. So I've actually already seen the movie. Thanks to my friends at the Real Screen, Real Rejects. They invited me to the IMAX headquarters this past weekend and we kind of got our own little screening and it was an awesome experience. As far as what I think about the movie, you can check out my tweet. I was not a big fan of the first film, but I did rewatch it before watching part two. And I did enjoy it a little bit more watching at home and watching it right before seeing part two. Definitely, I think, elevated my enjoyment of part two. But I can't wait to talk about that next week. It's going to make a lot of money. People are starving for like a big, bombastic sci-fi epic. You're going to get your plate full when this movie comes out, I guarantee you.
I'm definitely looking forward to seeing Dune this weekend. I rewatched Dune 1. Benny and I were talking about it beforehand. I watched Dune 1 on Monday. So I'm kind of fresh into that like lore again. So I'm excited to see it on Saturday. I will say like I'm one who did not like Dune the first time he watched it and then really liked it the second time. And now this being my third time and the most freshest time, I still enjoy it. I still think the like world building is incredible, but I really do feel like you could shave off 30 minutes and that movie would be right in the sweet spot and would be perfect. But we'll talk more Dune next week. My thoughts on this box office, like you said, JT, it's kind of, there's not a whole lot of, like even the movies that made money this weekend were still down. Like Bob Marley was number one last week. It had a 53% drop. There's just nothing really out there right now. Dune is going to clean up next weekend. That is for sure. Again, I don't know. I mean, Benny, you're kind of the anime dude. Is Demon Slayer, Is that an anime? I'm not familiar with that property, but it cleaned up this weekend at the box office.
Yeah, it's one of the more popular anime series out there. And this is not a movie. This is the last episode of the last season and the first episode of the new season. So this is actually kind of like a chosen thing where they're just putting episodes from the show into the theater. And then the niche crowd is coming out for that 1 to 2 weeks to see them on the big screen. And they did this last year with Demon Slayer, and it made around the same amount of money as well. I think this year made a little bit more. So, I mean, they found something that works to, you know, goose the coffers, and there's a dedicated fan base for it.
I feel like that's a smart move for these studios to do this. I mean, otherwise it just gets released on whatever streaming platform, and they're making good chunks of money. That Chosen has made almost $8 million after having been released. I mean, that's a TV show. Demon Slayer made $11.4 million. Even if that crowd just shows up for that first weekend or second weekend, knowing that that's going to be released, like, I still think that that's a brilliant move by studios to do that. They're basically printing money by doing that. My final thoughts, it's great to see Migration and Wonka, both movies I very much enjoyed. They're both continuing to do really well at the box office. And then Drive Away Dolls. I actually thought Drive Away Dolls was going to do a little bit better. Benny, you saw Drive Away Dolls. Or Drive Away Dolls, excuse me, correct?
I did see it. I think if this movie had been released in like the 80s, it would have a very passionate cult following. Like, it relies very heavily on, like, sexual shock value jokes. And, you know, in the 80s, when those were new things, being on the big screen, you know, they kind of blew you away and you had those big gut laughs. But they're, like, redoing these same jokes that have been going on since the early 80s. And so a lot of the big shock value jokes, they don't really hit. So I didn't particularly enjoy it. I think maybe if you didn't grow up watching raunchy comedies and this is your first experience with one, I think you will probably like it. But if you're somebody that's, you know, have been watching these things since, you know, Porky's came out, like, it's just going to fall flat. And like I said, other than the Big Lebowski, and this is just my personal opinion, I don't think the Coen brothers do comedy particularly well. They do dramedy, and they do drama pretty good, but like a straight comedy, I don't think really is their forte. And it kind of shows in this that, you know, it doesn't really flow as a comedy. And like the heist stuff doesn't even need to be there. It's really superfluous to most of it. But I will say one thing, people are really down on the box office right now. But if you look at the movies that are in the box office that are good, they're making money week after week. You know, Wonka is a solid movie. Migration is a cute movie. They're consistently making money. Movies that are not marketed but are just there for the niche audience only, those are making large sums of money for a very niche audience. The movies that are not making money are just mediocre movies. They shouldn't make money, you know? Like, there's a reason that Drive Away Dolls is not making money. There's a reason Argyle is not making money. There's a reason Madam Web didn't make money. This is not a commentary on the state of theaters. This is a commentary on people are not going to pay $25 by the time they get snacks to watch shit.
And, well, Benny, how do you explain to anyone but you?
How do you I have no, absolutely no way to explain that movie. Maybe it's a complete generational thing. I don't know. That movie is terrible. I don't know what's wrong with you people, but I'm happy that it's bringing joy into your life. I don't understand how, but I'm glad that it is. So good for all of you. I don't get it.
I mean, they took the two most gorgeous people on the planet and Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney and put them on screen. I mean, I'm sure that'll drudge up some money, a couple million bucks across the box office.
Yeah. And if either of them could act their way out of a paper bag, I'd be all for it, man. there are plenty of people. If you just want to see pretty people, just type that in Google. They'll give you plenty for free.
Well, before we move on to our next, our movie news, I wanted to kind of get your guys' estimates for how much money Dune is going to generate this weekend. So, Benny, what do you think?
So I'm going to give my prediction, but I'm going to hedge slightly, is I don't think it's going to come in at the estimates one way or another. I think it's either going to way underperform or way overperform. I think the overperform is more likely. So I'm going to say it's going to come in at $106 million for the weekend. If it doesn't, I think it'll come in at 65. I don't think it's going to hit the estimates.
Okay. JT, your guess.
You have to put in the factor.
The over and the under.
Yeah, I know. You have to put it in the factor that it is 3 hours long. It's 2 hours, 45 with trailers. We're looking at 315, 320. It's a long sit. So I'm going to say $93 million. That's my guess, right around $93 million. I think it's going to go overperform, but not crazy overperform. It's just going to do a little bit better than they're expecting. So I think you're estimating 65 to 75 million. I think it's going to make about 15 more than that.
I think most of them have gone up to 80 in the last.
Really? Okay. So yeah, I feel good with 93.
I'm going to set it at about $75 million. And not because I'm shitting on this movie. I think that the long runtime means that you have less showings in each theater. Like, I'm just playing kind of the like statistical game here. Like, it's going to have less showings in each theater. But also, I mean, it might do better because there's really not much else out there right now to contend with it this weekend. So, but yeah, I'll just to play devil's advocate to your guys' high numbers, I'll go low and say $75 million.
I find it interesting that the cast for this is so toward the young audience. You have Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, Zendaya, Timothy Chalamet. Like, the young audience should come out for these. These are their stars right now. Like, those are the like new Brat Pack of like young hot Hollywood stars. Whoever did the casting for Dune knew what they were doing, and they went for a very specific audience. So, and then you have Javier Bardem in there, and you know, Josh Brolin for the older audience. But I feel like that's going to give a little extra juice. Every time I jump on YouTube, there's all those good-looking young actors are promoting this movie in some different way. So I feel like they're really pushing them out there on a publicity tour.
This movie is stacked cast-wise. Like, outside of the young, like, you look at like the old, you have Javier Bardem, Josh Brolin, Oscar Isaac was in the first one, Christopher Walken, Stellan Skarsgård, Rebecca Ferguson. Like, this movie is stacked.
Now, I will say one thing though, is I will be very interested is if this movie does hit under, which I don't think it will, if what it is going to do to Denis Villeneuve in studio's eyes, because he's a few times out now has been given very large budgets for sci-fi movies, and they have not gotten particularly great returns. Like, Blade Runner 2049 was not a smash hit. The original Dune, like, it came out in the pandemic, so you can't blame it for it, but it still, you know, it didn't set the world on fire box office. And this one has gotten a massive sort of push in the media and with critics and things like that. So if it underperforms and comes in at $50 or $60 million on a $200+ million budget, I am going to be curious to see if he keeps getting these kind of money.
Yeah, and I believe the first Dune was also, wasn't it Day and Date on HBO Max?
It was.
So that definitely affected.
Yeah, it wasn't its fault. I'm just saying that, regardless of circumstances, this will be his third $200 million plus movie that doesn't end up breaking even if this underperforms.
Well, we'll move on to our first topic in movie news. And that is actually of the sad passing of Richard Lewis, who died actually today of a heart attack. You may remember Richard Lewis from Curb Your Enthusiasm, Once Upon a Crime, Robin Hood, Men in Tights, Wagons East, Leaving Las Vegas. Obviously a comedic actor who landed a couple of dramatic roles. I don't think he was really ever fit for the dramatic roles, but he always nailed the comedic roles in my eyes. I will always remember Richard Lewis from two movies in particular. One, Wagons East, because that was John Candy's last movie. But two, he was the sheriff of Rottingham in Robin Hood, Men in Tights, the Mel Brooks directed movie. And he had the running gag with the mole, where in every scene, the mole kept moving on his face. And finally, one day, the witch points it out, and he's like, I have a mole? So anyway, it's very sad. Richard Lewis was extremely funny. He was great on Curb Your Enthusiasm. That is a show I need to go back and revisit, but he always stood out for me. We say it every time we lose one of, you know, these old school Hollywood legends like Richard Lewis, that, you know, it is always sad when talent passes. Thank you, Richard, for the years of laughs.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, as long as I remember, I've just kind of known about Richard Lewis. I don't remember the first time I heard about him or the first movie I saw with him. But as far as I can remember, he's always just been somebody who's been around. And then when Curb Your Enthusiasm came out, it was like he was reintroduced to like a lot of people. And somebody who I, you know, like I said, Wagon Jeast is a film. Huge John Candy fan. I loved him in that. Benny and I were talking before the show. There's a movie called The Wrong Guys with Louis Anderson about grown-up Boy Scouts, which I used to love watching back in the 80s and early 90s. So Curb, though, is one of my all-time favorite shows. And I loved every time he came on. And I remember there was one season that he was barely on, I think because he was dealing with health issues. And I missed him. I was like, oh, man. And then the following season, he came back. I was like, thank you. Like, I love Curb, but some of my favorite moments in that show, and there's even moments that me and my friend quote to this day. I think like season 2 or 3, there's a scene where Richard Dreyfuss goes and to Larry David's office and they have this argument. And there's like 3 quotes just from that one argument that we would quote all the time. So yeah, rest in peace, Richard Lewis. You're hilarious. You're funny. And I'm glad everybody else kind of got to be reintroduced to him through Curb Your Enthusiasm. And it's a show I will live on.
Like, Richard Lewis to me is sort of like a dying breed. Like, I know when I was really young, there would always be these really old sort of Friars Club comedians like Henny Youngman and people like that. They were always on the late night TV shows. They were always like bit characters in random movies. And Richard Lewis sort of took over that, and he sort of became like the epitome of the neurotic stand-up comedian. Like, he owned that little space for his entire career. He was the archetype for that. And he's one of those guys that's always there in the background. Like, you never like wake up thinking, it's like, man, I got to go get me some Richard Lewis content today. But then like when you go back to your childhood and you think, oh yeah, he was on TV all the time. He was in movies all the time. And so it's another part of like getting old, as you start seeing all these bits of the background of your childhood fading away. And it's kind of sad, but you know, I thank him for his contribution to my life throughout, being in the background of my entertainment. And, you know, I hope his family is at peace and he's in a good place, man.
Moving on to a little bit more movie news. One happy, one sad. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles sequel will be coming out next year. We are getting a sequel to Mutant Mayhem. Very excited for that.
Yeah, very sad. This is my top 10.
Very sad that the Seth MacFarlane directed Naked Gun movie starring Liam Neeson as Detective Frank Drebin will also be coming out.
So wait, are you guys completely out on this? Because I have some hope, only because even the movies like Ted 2, I didn't like as much as the Ted film, A Million Ways to Die. Every time Liam Neeson would come in just in those movies as cameos, he killed it. Like, yeah. I feel like he has such a great comedic, you know, deadpan kind of delivery that I couldn't think of anybody else that could replace Leslie Nielsen. I don't think you can do much better than Liam Neeson. So I'm really curious to see how he does. But I do agree with you guys. The Seth MacFarlane thing is what worries me.
Yes.
And is he writing the movie also? That's a good question.
That's an excellent question. That I don't know. But that is what worries me about this movie. It's not Liam Neeson. Like, I am actually all on board with Liam Neeson playing Detective Frank Drebin. I'm just not on board with Seth MacFarlane directing a Naked Gun movie. You know, the Naked Gun movies, like, there wasn't a lot of, like, poop and dick jokes in the original. There were some, but it was all parody. And like, it was very slapstick comedy, and Seth MacFarlane kind of really relies on that like poop and fart joke humor, to the point where like A Million Ways to Die in the West is almost unwatchable.
Agreed.
It's terrible. And sure, Liam Neeson is fun as the bad guy in that movie, and he's fun when he showed up in Ted 2, but at the same time, like, He worries me about this movie. And I know that this is a passion project for Seth MacFarlane, so maybe he will take a different approach on this one. But he is the component of this movie that makes me dread this movie. That being said, I'm extremely excited for a second Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem movie. I loved this first one. It was outstanding. I gushed about it with you guys on this podcast. So excited for that, dreading the Naked Gun movie.
I'm in the exact same boat. Like the Mutant Mayhem, it didn't go where I wanted a Turtles movie to go, but nonetheless, that's my opinion of it. What it was in and of itself was a really enjoyable kids cartoon. And so I have no qualms about seeing another one. It'll probably go like a direction I don't want Turtles stuff to go, but I'll still have fun watching it. Now the Seth MacFarlane thing, I know this will sound insane because everything about Naked the Gun is over the top and ridiculous, but it's almost like what made that work is the rest of the movie is very subtle and is almost played with like a weird straightness, which Liam Neeson would be perfect to do. But in none of Seth MacFarlane's anything that he makes, is there any subtlety? It's all just the over the top. And so I'm sure there'll be a few funny over the top moments, but I have no faith whatsoever in him that he can build a subtle movie to where those things matter.
I think the thing I'm really kind of thinking about this is Seth MacFarlane, when he made those million ways, thousand ways to die, whatever it was called, when he made Ted, it felt like a Seth MacFarlane movie. It felt like Family Guy expanded into a film.
Yeah.
He needs to go into this movie, not making a Seth MacFarlane movie. He needs to go in with the mindset of making a Naked Gun movie. And if he could make that switch and try to, you know, not put any Family Guy type jokes and try to just make something that's true to the original trilogy, he could have success. But if he does fall into that Seth MacFarlane trap, then I think it could be pretty bad.
I hope he does, man. I hope this is amazing. But there's nothing that he's ever done that makes me believe he can do that.
I agree. I agree with both of your statements. A, with Benny agreeing that he doesn't have it in him to do that, or hasn't at least yet. And B, with JT, like 100% agreed. If he tries a new direction and he doesn't put forth a Family Guy parody of some sorts, like he has in basically everything that he has done, even like, I know that this is totally being nitpicky, but he likes to use the like big band orchestras. And he has these big musical numbers that kind of play throughout like the Family Guy shows and the movies that he puts out. Again, like if you're going to do a Naked Gun style movie, we don't need that. Like to Benny's point, like everyone else except for Frank Drebin is playing it straight. That's what we need. We need that type. It's like Airplane. Like Leslie Nielsen in Airplane plays the straight man that just works so funny in the entire movie because of the way like he acts and he behaves. So I feel like you're touching like the Holy Bible and you're about to try to rewrite it again. Right. So I don't know. I'm not too jazzed about it. I don't think we're going to get anything different than a poop and fart parody of what are great movies, the Naked Gun trilogy. Well, we'll move on to our last story for movie news. And Kevin Costner, it was obviously made some headlines because the show Yellowstone is insanely popular. Kevin Costner recently left Yellowstone. I shouldn't say recently, but he left Yellowstone to direct a passion project of his called Horizon. It's a Western movie. It's an American saga. His first part one trailer was released. Now, he envisions this being a four-part movie series. At the moment, he's committed to directing two of these four. So we got our first look at Horizon. It was a 3-minute trailer, and this movie is directed by Kevin Costner. I got very, very, very similar vibes to the movie that he directed called Open Range with him and Robert Duvall, which I enjoyed. It's a very like slow burn movie, but then the action sequences at the end of the movie are very palpable. So I'm curious. I don't know if I want to sit through four movies about life on the frontier starring Kevin Costner. I would love to sit through like a 2.5-hour movie starring Kevin Costner. And this movie like looks beautiful from the trailer. Like the cinematography looks incredible. I absolutely will give it up to Kevin Costner. Every movie that he directs is visually beautiful. But I really feel like four parts, like even two parts, this is going to be really, really boring. So that's my take on this one. There wasn't anything about this trailer that made me go like, I can't wait to see this. I said, you know, I bet the score and I bet the cinematography is going to be beautiful. But at the same time, I don't know if he's going to tell me any story that I haven't already seen many, many times. Now, he left, obviously, one of the largest shows in the world, Yellowstone, to go direct these movies. So this is a passion project for him. That intrigues me a little bit. But for the moment, I'm not that excited to see this movie. Benny, how about you?
No, I'm completely out on Kevin Costner as a director. Like, whether it's his version of Tombstone, Wyatt Earp, whether it's The Postman, or even, I don't care if it won a bunch of Oscars, Dancing with Wolves. Kevin Costner makes movies at one speed and one tone. He's a lot like, for me, Denis Villeneuve in that way, where like the movies are long, they're pretty, but they're not all that interesting. They're dull, and they're all like 3 hours and 26 minutes for no reason whatsoever. And that's exactly what this is going to be, is just old men riding horses and bitching about cows for 2 hours and 47 minutes to get one shootout that lasts 8 minutes. I have no interest whatsoever in seeing this.
Wow. I didn't know Benny was going to go that hard on Kevin Costner. I feel kind of two ways about watching this trailer. One, it does look beautiful. The scope, it looks like a throwback to the great Westerns, like The Searchers, Once Upon a Time in the West. There were several scenes in this trailer that reminded me of those two specific films. Even some of the shots are taken right from those films. So I see what he's going for. He is basically making a love letter to the classic epic Westerns of the older days. The only thing that worries me is I didn't really get a sense of the story. It almost feels like I saw a trailer for like a new miniseries that was coming to Apple. That was going to be like an 8-episode event. Like, this is one movie. I don't really know what the story is besides it's people crossing to America. A lot of great actors popping up in this. Sam Worthington looked actually pretty good. Michael Rooker is in there. I like seeing the old grizzly Kevin Costner. It looks beautiful. I'm worried. Like, I didn't know they were going to make four. I thought it was just two. So hopefully he has at least just these two kind of blocked out, and the other two will happen if they happen. But hopefully these two movies tell a cohesive full story. It doesn't feel like something that should have been a miniseries. But I will say this. The money is on the screen. It looks fantastic. And when was the last time we had a really great Western in theaters? It's been a long time. So I'm all for it.
I'll tell you this, though. Like, if you go back and look at the movie Postman, for the time that it was shot, it looked really good, too. You know what I don't want to do? Watch the fucking Postman.
Yeah. Well, hopefully. But his last film was Open Range. And I'm with the... Moose, I really enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, it's a slow burn, but like, the story is compelling enough. I just, again, I'm hoping that we're not getting similar treads on this one, just 6 hours of it, you know?
It does kind of look like a greatest hits.
Yeah. I mean, to his defense, too, I mean, he's playing this character as a young man, too. So, and he's not using de-aging, he's using like practical makeup and prosthetics to play himself as a younger version. So he's going to be telling himself over, you know, the 30 years. So that's probably why this movie's going to be a four-parter, I guess. Well, folks, we are going to take a break. It will be a heck of a lot shorter than Kevin Costner's next couple of movies, I could tell you that. But we want to hear from our sponsors. But up next, since we're talking about Land of Bad, which is a movie where this mission went wrong, we decided to choose our favorite movies where missions went wrong. Could be for the villain, could be for the good guy, could be in space, could be on the ground. We'll find out. Stay tuned.
Audiences across the country have made Black Hawk Down the number one movie in America.
I just want to do it right today.
Just get all your men back here alive.
And critics agree.
One is going down.
It's one of the best movies of the year. Time Magazine, USA Today, Rolling Stone, Roger Ebert, Ebert Morning America, New York Daily, Los Angeles Times, Screen International, NBC, AFI, Washington Post, National Board of Review. Black Hawk Down. Rated R. Now playing in theaters everywhere.
But if you're captured, we'll deny any participation or even knowledge of your existence.
This sounds familiar.
The first time was for himself. The second time was for his country. This time is to save his friend.
You both will die. For what?
Because you do it for me.
Stallone is back in Rambo 3.
Who are you?
The worst nightmare.
Rated R.
Welcome back. And our plan was to talk about missions that went wrong. But once again, the mission went wrong and our plan went to shit. So now we're just going to talk about movies where their plans went to shit. See what I did there? It all connects, people. So Land of Bad, in my opinion, is very similar to a movie called Behind Enemy Lines. I'm going to kick us off with that one. That's Gene Hackman, Owen Wilson. Owen Wilson is a fighter pilot. He is shot down behind enemy lines. Get the name. And everyone scrambles to rescue him. And what was a burned relationship between himself and Gene Hackman comes to fruition at the end as Gene Hackman literally puts his career and his own troops on the line to be able to rescue Owen Wilson's stranded person. So that's kind of the idea of what we're shooting for in these movies here. I kicked us off with Behind Enemy Lines. JT, what do you got? Well, one, do you like Enemy Lines? Do you not?
Well, you know, Behind Enemy Lines, I remember seeing it in theaters, and I kind of enjoyed it. I like Gene Hackman. It is similar to Land of Bad because you have a established older actor who's really well-known, which is Russell Crowe, and this one is Gene Hackman. And the director, John Moore, who directed Behind Enemy Lines, just made some all-time stinkers after this. He did the Max Payne movie. Oof. And he did the last Die Hard film, Good Day to Die Hard.
Oof.
And I think the film he did before that was Flight of the Phoenix, the one with Dennis Quaid. It was like a remake. That one was okay.
Yeah, okay.
He has a real up and down filmography. But I did like Behind Enemy Lines back in the day. It does show some creative camera stuff, some a little bit more style over substance, I guess you would say. Mm-hmm. And Owen Wilson is a very charming guy. I haven't seen it in a while, so it's something I might have to revisit. I liked it, but I didn't love it back in the day. I feel like I did revisit it somewhere down the line. I was like, oh, this isn't as good as I remembered. This is like passable, but enjoyable. So for me, obviously, I could talk about the Rambo films. Rambo 2 and 3 are two missions that go wrong. Rambo 2, he's there just to take pictures of the POW, decides to save them. They leave his ass there, and he goes full Rambo rage. And then in part 3, the colonel goes on a mission, goes wrong, gets captured.
Oh, that's right.
Then the dad from that 70s show is like, comes and tells Rambo, we're leaving him there. Like, he just wanted to let you know. He's like, what about me? You can't go back there. And then, so the Rambo movies live on this thing. Even the last Rambo movie, not the last one, but the Rambo 4, just called Rambo. A team mercenaries go in to save, you know, some missionaries that their mission went wrong. They got kidnapped by the Burmese, like, you know, extremists. And Rambo's there to help them all out. So the Rambo franchise lives on this kind of mission gone wrong. And I love it. I just can't help but love it. So I'll just go ahead and throw those Rambo movies out there. I have some more, but I want to hear what Benny comes at us with.
All right. So the first one I'm going to throw out here is in honor of Driveaway Dolls. And that is Porky's Part 1. A group of intrepid teenagers go on a mission to get some hookers, and instead they are beset by a bunch of rednecks, beaten to a pulp, and then they have to rally the troops to survive, and they have to go back to conquer the bad guys. It's really the foundation of most great military movies, but told in a very unique sex comedy way. And so that's why I'm starting off with Porky's Part 1. If you've never seen it, it's the foundation of teenage sex comedies. It really lays the groundwork for all the movies throughout the 90s, like American Pie, etc. It does not hold up to modern sensibilities, so if that's important to you, don't watch it. If that's not important to you, go watch it. It's hilarious.
I feel like only Benny would. We would give Missions Gone Wrong as A
yep.
credit, and you would choose Porky's.
The mission went very wrong.
Manny, I love you, buddy. I got to go with, I think, probably the quintessential, like, Mission Gone Wrong movie, and that would be Apollo 13. 1995, Ron Howard directed Apollo 13. Again, you talk about a stacked cast. That was a stacked cast. Even, you know, for today's standard, that is still a stacked cast. Bill Pullman, Kevin Bacon, Tom Hanks, Gary Sinise, Ed Harris. Like, there was a lot of star power in that movie. And won Ron Howard his Oscar. So I love Apollo 13. I think the movie still holds up. I recently rewatched it. It's one of my wife's favorites. So it's a good flick.
It is an all-time classic.
Yeah, it might be Ron Howard's best film, honestly, I think, overall. Would you agree, Benny? Or Willow?
dramatic movie, absolutely. I think Rush is really good.
Rush
but
is
it good. Doesn't have the rewatchability of it. So, yeah, I would say it's probably his best movie.
I think Cinderella Man is a close second.
Cinderella Man's really good.
I do like Cinderella Man to rewatch it. I'll keep it in the military line. Anton Fuqua had a really interesting early career. He did Training Day with Denzel. He did King Arthur with Clive Owen, with Jerry Bruckheimer. But he also did Tears of the Sun with Bruce Willis. Another movie about a military group that goes, you know, behind enemy lines and gets sidetracked and it kind of takes on this other mission that they weren't there to do. It's a very violent film and it's not an easy movie to watch, but I do think it's one of Bruce Willis's better, like, early 2000 action films. And it's a good military thriller. And a more recent one I also throw in there is Lone Survivor, starring Mark Wahlberg, Taylor Kitsch, Eric Bana's in that. That's a really good film, really brutal, hard to watch. Ben Foster is great in that film, directed by Peter Berg. So again, if you're looking for something that, like, complement the movie we're going to be reviewing today, Land of Bad, those are two films I would definitely highly recommend.
Tears of the Sun that's Monica Bellucci too in that, right?
Correct. Yeah, she plays the first aid worker, like the, you know, Peace Corps worker or whatever she is there. But yeah, and then great cast, just supporting characters, but Bruce Willis plays the Sarge.
So I'll throw two out there. One doesn't need any commentary, so it's kind of a throwaway, and it's Predator. You know, they're going out there to take out some drug dealers, right. And then an alien comes out there, and the mission just goes to shit, and only two people survive. So it's one of the all-time great sci-fi movies, so I don't think there's a lot that needs to be said about it. But another one, it's an older one. It's Assault on Precinct 13. There's a remake of it. I think it was Ethan Hawke. I'm not.
Yeah, and the remake is not bad.
No, it's not. But the original one, it's very interesting. It's very 1970s John Carpenter. And it has its own unique vibe that's different from the movies that are made now that were made in the 80s. And it does a really great job of building tension. It's a cop. They're just going in to shut down the station, essentially to clean it out, to, you know, hold it over for its demise. And then it's just attacked by a gang of psychopaths. So it's a really interesting horror action movie, and it has a very unique vibe as opposed to the more recent movies. So it's definitely something checking out if you like John Carpenter movies, horror, or older just movies with a unique vibe.
I'll throw out two, but the one I'll throw out, I kind of primarily want to talk to you guys about, but one is The Martian. I've gone into great lengths on this podcast about my love of this movie. But yeah, it's a mission to Mars. He gets left behind. Great ending. But one that is not a great ending is the movie Valkyrie with Tom Cruise. It is about the group of German aristocrats, German soldiers, German officers that all plot together during World War II, during the height of Hitler's power, to assassinate Adolf Hitler and take power. Spoiler alert for a movie that's, I don't know, 10 years old probably at this point in time. They don't succeed and everyone dies. And so this is kind of the, like, purest form of, like, the mission was simple, the execution flawed, and it did not go right. That was an interesting stacked cast. Like that was a stacked cast in that movie too.
Well, speaking of stacked casts, we haven't mentioned Black Hawk Down, which has one of the best casts. Like every other character, you're like, oh my god, he's in this. Oh my god, he's in this. I mean, based on a true story, Ridley Scott, you know, one of the great directors, was nominated for Best Director that year, but not the movie was not nominated for Best Picture. So I think it just shows you how impressed they were with that film, because back in those days when it was just five nominations, usually if you got a Best Director, you got a Best Picture nomination. But I think Ridley directed the hell out of that movie. It is a movie that once boots hit the ground, it is nonstop. A barrage on your senses. And it's a masterwork, in my opinion, of directing and action. Like, you're never lost of where what's happening, what's going on, and there's a thousand things going on at once, bullets flying, explosions. So I think that's a really great film. And to compliment Benny's choice over there, there's a film called Dog Soldiers, which is about a group of military team in Ireland who are basically on a training mission and encounter werewolves. This is a very hard R, violent, gritty, kind of low budget, but not too low budget horror film. It's got quite a big cult following. There's been several releases. I think it just got released on 4K. If you want like a really fun werewolf, bloody movie that also has a military aspect to it, I definitely recommend checking out Dog Soldiers. It is a really good time when watching a movie.
Now, I'm going to throw another out, and I think you can debate whether or not really it worked, but I'm going to say that spoiler alert, the movie's 40 years old, though. It's Glory. It's a Civil War movie, very famous. Denzel Washington won an Oscar.
Of course, everybody knows Glory.
I know everyone knows it. Some people may be younger. They may not know it offhand. But it's one of the best war movies of all time. But in the end, everyone dies, and I believe the South still ends up holding the fort. So the mission does go wrong. But, you know, if you like war movies, if you like historical racial dramas, it packs a punch in every regard. So definitely check it out, especially, you know, if you're younger and you've not heard of it, not seen it, go and give it a watch. It's definitely worth your time. 100%. And by the way, it's the only great performance Matthew Broderick ever gave.
whoa. I forgot. You're a Ferris Bueller hater, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
You're out of your mind. I love Glory. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. I was actually lucky enough to see in LA for the AFI Fest, and Denzel came out and introduced it to us. It was amazing. Seeing it on a big screen was amazing. Yeah, one of the best soundtracks also to like any movie. Me and Ken Napzok would always talk about how we used to have that soundtrack on cassette and just listen to it over and over. So great film. The mission definitely goes wrong, but it is a symbolic victory.
Great pick. Man, I haven't watched Glory in probably 20 years, but I think about that movie and it's, again, talk about a stacked cast. Morgan Freeman, Denzel Washington, Cary Elwes is in that movie. Andre Brower, the late Andre Brower. That was his first movie. Yeah, boy, I need to go back and rewatch Glory. I forgot that was, I remember seeing that movie in elementary school, and then in the short span between elementary school and high school, that became required watching in high school. Okay. I know what I'm watching this weekend aside from Dune.
Any other military movies, missions gone wrong, that kind of stick out to you guys?
Nothing that wouldn't be like really on the beaten path, like Saving Private Ryan, the mission goes wrong.
Yeah,
sure.
But I mean, it's a movie that no one doesn't know.
We were joking around beforehand and Benny was like, I can't think of a movie that isn't villain led. And so, I mean, I'm going to steal from you, Benny, because we were joking about this, because I made a joke about, like Avengers Endgame, Thanos Vale. And so we'll do it from a villain's perspective. The Infinity War saga, Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame. Sorry, Thanos, it went right for you eventually, but eventually it went wrong.
He did accomplish the mission. They just used time travel.
That's true. They cheated him out of his destiny. But still, the original mission was to eradicate half of life across the universe. That did not happen. Sorry, you nutsack-chinned villain, you. How about you guys? You guys got anything left in the tank?
I think that's pretty much it, man. I'm trying to, like, Glorious Bastards in some ways kind of falls in that category because the mission didn't really go as planned, and they kind of had to pull it audible, and they, you know, they got to shoot Hitler in the face with machine gun. So that one worked out pretty well. I mean, all the Expendable movies basically are missions that go wrong. I think it's Stallone, is something Stallone just kind of falls back on. So I'll shout out the Expendable films, even the fourth one.
I am tapped out. I mean, I could work Police Academy 5 into this conversation, but I won't.
Always trying to push the Police Academy. If Benny was a drug dealer, his drug would be Police Academy.
And I'd be a rich man.
Quick question, Benny. If they were to remake Police Academy, who would you cast as some of the major roles?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I'll tell you right now, Hightower. No, is it Hightower? Who's the cop?
They're all cops.
Not the cops. the guy who thinks he's Dirty Harry. What's his name again?
Tackleberry. That's Tackleberry.
Tackleberry. If I was casting Police Academy right now, I would get John Cena as Tackleberry.
Okay. He'd be an interesting Tackleberry. If there were no limits whatsoever and I could just get like anyone I wanted for any role. That's a tough question.
Gutenberg. Who's playing Gutenberg? I kind of see like Bradley Cooper maybe doing if he was a little younger.
That was who popped into my mind first, because it's got to be someone that's handsome but not like totally jacked. Oh, man. So many possibilities. Like, I would like to see maybe I don't know. That's what I'm going to spend like the hour after the show like pondering this
now. I think I broke Benny's brain.
Yeah.
We'll have to come back to this, but I do like that John Cena pick.
That's a good pick, man. Yeah, we definitely would have to have, her name, Oscar winner, multiple times, out of my head. It's like she has to play Hooks.
I don't know who you're referring to.
What did she win an Oscar
She's in The Woman King. She's Waller, right? Amanda Waller.
Viola Davis.
Viola Davis has to play Hooks, of course.
She's a little too old, but yeah. I can see it. The girl from The Bear might actually be able to play her, too.
Edie Iriberri, yeah.
Yeah, I can't pronounce her name to save my life, but she would actually be good because she's younger. Who would I get to play? Oh, man. Bobcat Goldthwait's character, him and his friend with the glasses. You'd have to do some real interesting casting there. Pete Davidson's in this movie somewhere.
Probably.
But, yeah. Oh, sure. Pete Davidson would be. You could even put Pete Davidson in the Gutenberg.
Yeah, sure, I was going to say that. People would hate it, but you know, he would fit that mold.
Yeah.
Who would play the Bubba Smith role?
Marshawn Lynch. He's not big enough, though.
Oh, yes. Oh, I love that pick.
Got to get a football player in there. He's not the tallest, but he can still do it.
LeBron James.
Yeah, and Bubba Smith always had that. He wasn't a big talker. He was quiet. Oh, I love that. I love Marshawn Lynch. Nice.
All right, good pick. Benny, we'll start working on a script ASAP. We'll write this whole thing out. Don't worry about it. But maybe this will be a podcast for another day. We'll do podcasts where we just do dream casts if we made the movie.
Oh, I love that. Well, stay tuned for our new podcast, Dreamcasts, with your extra movie butter boys. But also stay tuned. We're going to take a break. We are going to talk about our review, or we are going to give our review of Land of Bat. Non-spoiler, and then, of course, spoiler. Stay tuned.
Dad, you don't need to wake her. Just tell her I said Merry Christmas.
Well, we understand. You got important things to do over there.
Dad, I gotta go.
Well, we're very proud of you. On November 30th, it's time.
You still got your boots, haven't you, cowboy?
They were tied on.
To bring him home.
Archangel is down, and I am on the run.
Maybe I carried it too far.
It's not your fault.
The American people want their pilot.
Let's get our boy back.
Behind enemy lines.
We're coming to get you, son.
Rated PG-13. November 30th, only in theaters.
From the director of Training Day.
I'm here to get you and your people out.
Comes a bold new breed of action film.
We got trouble.
Tears of the Sun is the best military thriller since Black Hawk Down.
You are on your own.
It grabs you and won't let go.
Everybody down!
It's the best Bruce Willis action film since Die Hard.
Hold the line!
And now, Ebert and Roper have given it two thumbs up. Bruce Willis, Tears of the Sun, rated R, now playing in theaters everywhere.
Welcome back, and now our review of Land of Bad. While we were on break, we came up with the perfect casting for the Steve Guttenberg character in Police Academy. The one and only James Tiberius Kirk himself, Chris Pine. I love that casting.
Great choice. That is a good choice.
Love it.
And I also mentioned the guys at a game night, right? He worked with them before.
Yes.
Dungeons & Dragons.
Yes. Get those guys as directors. Get Lord Miller from the 21 Jump Street movies. We're cooking. We'll have a much better movie than the movie that we are about to review. And that is Land of Bad. This movie, directed by William Eubank. If you're unfamiliar with William Eubank's pedigree, he has directed a couple movies. Probably his most notable movie is Paranormal Activity Next of Kin. He also had a movie called Underwater. Now, I enjoyed Underwater. That one was with Kristen Stewart. That movie came out a couple of years back, but this is his most recent one. Did not do well at the box office, but one of the reasons this movie did not do well at the box office, it also released on streaming same time. So I believe, JT, you were the only one of us that saw this in theaters?
No, so I actually was planning on seeing this in theaters, but I had some things just didn't work out, put it that way. I wish I could have saw Dune, actually. I think knocked it out of of where I was going to go see it. So, but I wish I saw it in theaters because this is a movie that I think would benefit from having the bass and the surround sound. Any kind of action movie, I feel like, gets that kind of benefit. But, yeah, it is streaming or VOD to rent, or if you can't make it out to the theater, so you can rent it.
So the movie stars Liam Hemsworth as Sergeant Playboy Kenny, JJ Playboy Kenny, Russell Crowe as Eddie the Reaper, Luke Hemsworth, so we got two Hemsworths in this one, and Milo Ventimiglia. The premise behind the movie is simple. This is a military movie. They go out on a mission. They have air and drone coverage, and the drone pilot is one Russell Crowe. The mission goes awry. You find Luke Hemsworth fighting on his own. That's basically the movie. Now we'll go in. There's more to it, but we'll go into movie territory or spoilers during that time. So JT, why don't you kick us off with your thoughts and opinions on Land of Bad?
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel two ways about this movie. I understand why it's also released on VOD, because I do think the lead, Liam Hemsworth, does a serviceable job. But I think if you had a more charismatic actor or somebody who just drawed you more to the screen, it would have greatly improved this movie. What I will give credit to is the director, because I think the director kind of directs the fuck out of this thing. Like, what could have been a very passable and forgettable kind of action military movie, I think is elevated by the camera work, the use of slow motion, and just overall the cinematography and choreography of the action scenes. Sometimes when I worry about these VOD movies, I see an explosion, I'm like, that's just a CGI ball of fire. That thing looks fake as hell. This, when there is a drone attack in this movie, you feel it. It looks real. It's slowed down. The action in this movie is very R-rated, hard-hitting, and graphic, but it is also done in not a very stylized, but yet also unstylized way. It feels very real. When people get hit, shot, and taken out, it feels real and visceral. I think Milo Ventimiglia, whatever his name is, Rocky Jr., I'll call him, I think he's the most badass I've ever seen him. Like, he really impressed me in this movie to the point where I kind of wish he had the lead role of Liam Hemsworth. I think Liam is kind of the weakest thing in this movie. I think Russell Crowe actually brings his A-game for the most part to this movie. It reminded me of a similar film that he did with Leonardo DiCaprio called Body of Lies, where Leo's out literally in the shit. And every time it cuts back to Russell Crowe, he's shopping. He's taking his kids to like soccer practice. He's in a minivan. And this movie is kind of doing the same thing. There's a point where he's grocery shopping and Liam Hemsworth is like in the seventh ring of hell terrorism. So there are some things that this movie borrows from Bodies of Lies. But I think this movie, for, you know, a smaller budget film, I think the director really elevates the film in a lot of ways. And I was impressed by someone who watches a lot of action films, has watched a lot of military films like this. I was impressed by the filmmaking in this film. And to me, it elevated it to something where I kind of wish I did make the trek out to go see in the theater, because he didn't go cheap. He doesn't have CGI stuff all over the place. Most of the effects in this are practical, and most of the violence and action scenes are very visceral, and he doesn't shy away from the violence. But at the same time, it's not breaking any new ground. Okay, this movie is not super original. It is literally what you said. It's a man on a mission. This is, like we talked earlier about the movie Behind Enemy Lines. That movie is very stylized at times, and it feels kind of like a popcorn kind of fun action movie. This movie is doing the hard R version of that. And I respect that, because I like my hard R action movies. So overall, I think the movie is more of a success than it is a failure. I think it deserved to go to theaters, and I hope some people went and saw this with low expectations and probably came out pretty happy. But I do think Liam Hemsworth kind of drags the movie down a little bit. I don't think he's bad. That's the thing. He's not like, I didn't leave this movie like, God, Liam Hemsworth was so bad in this movie. He was serviceable. So if you had a great actor, like imagine you had Jake Gyllenhaal in that scene. Like, you throw somebody just who's a great actor and has great charisma and great screen presence, it brings this movie up like a whole letter grade, in my opinion. But the director, I think, really brings his A game. I was a huge fan of Underwater for all the same reasons. I thought Underwater had a great visual sense to it, had a great atmosphere to it. I think for a military action movie, this also has that. So overall, a thumbs up, but not a huge thumbs up. It was just, you know what? If you like these kind of movies, this is one of the better ones I've seen in a while.
How about you, Benny? What did you think of this movie?
So I think if this movie had came out in 2002, people would look like at it like an all-time classic action movie. Because like in 2002, like right after 9/11, the only qualification for a great villain is that you were Muslim and you had a gun. And that's the villain in this movie, is he's Muslim and has a gun. That's his entire character arc. That being said, I really liked this movie a lot, actually. I had a lot of fun with it. But, you know, the characters are not really deeply developed in any way. This is you're going in to watch things explode and to watch people fight. And if you're okay with that and you go in knowing that that's what you're going for, you can really enjoy it. The only person that has any character development is Russell Crowe's character. And I really like Russell Crowe's character. I would watch him shop for vegan food for half an hour, which I did, and I got a kick out of that. So for me, it's a really, really good movie, because I'm fine with that's what you're giving me. I know that's what I'm getting, and everyone did their job. And like JTE, like the This Is Us guy, I want him to get his own action movie, because like when he was on the screen, I was like, damn, he's jacked and he's bringing it. You know,
so like growing a beard.
I know, like I want him to get a movie like this of his own now. But overall, like I said, it's a fun, you know, not I want to say gritty, but it's a fun hyper violent action movie. And if you're cool with that and sort of shallow characters, you'll have a lot of fun with it.
Woof. Sorry guys, I hated this movie.
Wow, hate. Damn.
This movie was so bad. It doesn't know what it wants to be. This movie has no idea what it wants to be. And yes, while I did enjoy Russell Crowe chewing some scenery in certain parts, the tonal shifts in this movie make this movie terrible. I don't know if this movie is pro-military, like pro-American military, or against or criticizing, because it does all of the above. I'm not exactly sure what the director was going for on this one. The action doesn't work for me, because there's this counter. For every action scene, there is a counter scene that is occurring with Russell Crowe. And I understand that that's the idea behind the movie, but there's such tonal shifts between what's happening for Russell Crowe and what's happening between Liam Hemsworth that you can't take the action serious. And so it makes an action movie boring. It makes it it is not serviceable. Like I said, this is either the greatest American military recruitment video, or this is the biggest shit on the American military propaganda. I cannot understand the choices that are made in this movie. It's so distracting that watching Liam Hemsworth be tortured and Milo Ventimiglia be tortured while Russell Crowe is shopping. I don't know what's more torturous, watching him shop for vegan food or watching Liam Hemsworth be tortured. It's terrible. The only bright spot in this is, yes, Milo Ventimiglia. He's the only bright spot in this movie. And yeah, he brings it. Look, the dude hasn't had a lot. Yeah, he's had This Is Us, and, you know, he was Peter Petrelli in the Heroes. But yeah, he was jacked in this one. And I mean, he was a badass in this one. And then he was the only one that was legitimately acting his heart out. Like, when he was shot, I genuinely, like, spoiler, sorry. When he was executed, I genuinely was like, well, there's the only reason why I'm keeping this movie on.
All right, well, let's go into spoilers since we're already in there. Because I'm very curious to hear about the tonal thing, because I didn't feel that. I think there is obviously a tonal thing when you go from the U.S. to, like, him on his mission, because of just their surroundings or where their environment is. So now that we're in spoilers, where did that tonal shift really affect you the most? Like, I felt like when it did go to Russell Crowe, it wasn't like overly comedic. It wasn't like, oh my God, here's like them just having a fun time. It felt like a guy who was just taking his job seriously, surrounded by a bunch of people who weren't taking their job seriously.
Yeah, but it wasn't. That was the thing. Like, they made you want to think that Russell Crowe is this like dedicated guy, but he wasn't. Like, the dude's in a Hawaiian shirt. He's out golfing, you know, in between, like, or during his shift. Like, oh, the drone hasn't launched yet. So what is he doing? He's out teeing off. He's getting into arguments with his commanding officer. His commanding officer is clearly incompetent in this movie. The whole military, like, apparatus in this movie is clearly incompetent, because so many things happen in this movie that you're like, I thought like we were supposed to be like a precision military unit here. Instead, you guys are just the worst. it's terrible. The tonal shift. So the biggest one for me is obviously the torture scenes. Like, it goes really, really, or it attempts to go really, really dark with, to Benny's point, the Muslim with a gun villain, which again, like, there is no character development that makes me care about anyone other than Russell Crowe. And Russell Crowe is at this point in time just a disgraced, like, old military, like, he's not even an officer. He's a drone pilot. Like, yeah, I found him comedic, and I found, like, but it's Russell Crowe. Like, it's him basically doing like an elonged character from The Nice Guy, or from The Nice Guys. And so I didn't care what was happening to Luke Hemsworth. But then it attempts
Liam,
to go real Liam. Excuse me. Well, Luke dies early on, and he was the only one that was the interesting one in the movie. But early, like, it goes very, very dark, and it attempts to go very, very dark. And during this very, very, very dark sequence, we just have this very light and breezy Russell Crowe walking around. We learn that this is his sixth marriage, and, you know, his wife is vegan, so he's walking through this vegan shop, and he's got his little shopping list on his cell phone, and it's so light and breezy, and then it clips to him being beaten savagely, and they just shot Milo Ventimiglia in the head, like, aggressively. These guys are just completely bloodied from head to toe. And then back to Russell Crowe, excuse me. And Russell Crowe's walking through, and he's looking at cheese, and he's asking the guy behind, you know, do you have gluten free? Who gives a shit? It's terrible. Like, the tonal shifts do not work.
The thing, though, like, it's just a guy getting off of work. If the grocery store had the tone of the people being tortured, it'd be weird.
But what the hell does that have to do with taking
this movie
in any way, shape, or form serious?
I think it shows you just how different war is compared to some of the war films that we probably grew up with in, like, the 80s and 90s. War is somebody who goes to their desk, clocks in, does what they have to do, then clocks out. It is not like the war time of old. It has become almost like a video game to some of these people. It has become like sitting at your computer is literally becoming what the military is. Now,
see, that's the movie I would have wanted to watch. In no way, shape, or form did I get that from this. And then on top of it, I feel like Russell Crowe and his partner were extremely incompetent. He brought like one missile in his drone, because all he does is he fires one missile from the thing. And then the rest of the time he's just sitting there. He's like, I'm out of ammo. I'm out of ammo. You only have one drone.
You have guys behind enemy lines, and no one is taking this at all like serious.
I'm not a military guy, guys, so I can't tell you like how much a drone could hold as far as missiles and ammunition. But I loved the aspect of him constantly getting chased and surrounded. And when those drones did attack, it was fucking impressive. Like, it was carnage on a level like I've seen in very few movies. The fact that this one guy is surviving because of this drone. And the, I remember I was watching the movie and I said, if I'm the guys working for this military, you know, terrorist, I'm like, I'm not going out there in the pickup truck because they've got nukes and napalm going off. These drones are killing us by the hundreds out there. Let this guy go. So, like, to me, I was watching it just be like, man, the full force of the U.S. military is on display in this movie. And it showed me, like, the fact that one guy with a walkie-talkie and a gun could do this much damage. It just shows you, like, how advanced we are. It's
so unbelievable. They wouldn't have gone after him. They would have let him go. They weren't after them to begin with. They were attacked. They would have retreated inward. Seeing the display of awesome U.S. military might, they wouldn't have pursued him. They didn't. Okay. They hardly even knew that the guy existed because he fell into an enemy cave.
Well, first of all, I don't go into this movie expecting like a real life military-esque movie. It's not as ridiculous as like the Expendables or anything. But at the same time, I know I'm going to watch an action movie. So that kind of stuff, bad guys are going to be bad. They're going to come at him with all the weapons. I'm not looking for like a true, you know, fact for fact recreation of a military mission. To me, this is just a heightened action movie using the technology that the military has today. So yes, if I was watching this thinking, oh, this is unrealistic, I know it's unrealistic. I'm at the movies. I'm here to watch a really good action movie. I'm not looking to, when Arnold Schwarzenegger stole that jet and True Lies and started taking out the building, I was just sitting there thinking, come on, he wouldn't do this.
That was way more believable than any of the bullshit I saw in this movie. So the first 7 minutes of this movie, he's standing there looking at a box of Fruity Pebbles and Frosted Flakes. And he's looking at this cereal like it is some type of a foreign food that he has never in his entire life seen. That went on for like 4.5 minutes. And then the debate between him and his brother about the cereal. Oh my God, that's how you kick off this movie? The debate over the Fruit Loops or Frosted Flakes. And he's sitting there and he takes the time to turn them around. The product placement in this movie is so fucking blatant and over the head. At one point in time, once a guy walks into the room and goes, during this mission, during this high tense mission, and goes, hey, I'm going on a Starbucks run. You guys want anything?
I worked in, you know, a production office where I went to the cafeteria section and I said, do I want an everything bagel or do I want a plain bagel or do I want some Rice Krispies? The mundane trappings of what the office business is what that is capturing that moment. And it played true to me. I was like, yep, that's me every morning when I went to the office and I had to pick something for breakfast before I start doing 3 shows in a row. Whereas this guy's going to be literally on a computer for the next 5 hours. So all that mundane office stuff, none of it bothered me.
Yeah, I'm with JTE on that. I actually thought that was kind of realistic for people that work in like high stress jobs. Like I've worked in like a really like high stress, dangerous job before, you know, and I've worked around a lot of first responders and sort of that weird interplay is how it works. Like literally, I've seen a cop throw a guy through a vending machine's window and 30 seconds later sitting there arguing with him about how much creamer goes in coffee. You know, like that weird transition is how you cope with like situations humans are not supposed to be in, is that you ground yourself in the mundane. So like him going out and when he's on break hitting a golf club, or a guy going into Starbucks while everyone else is on this insane mission. That literally is how people that work those kind of jobs function.
It didn't work for me. I'm sorry. It's okay.
You know what? I get it. If it didn't work for you, I totally understand. I was curious though, like Body of Lies, there's a scene where Leo's being waterboarded and it cuts to like Russell Crowe in a minivan dropping his kids off at school. Like, did you remember that? Did you see that film? Did it bother you back then?
Yeah, of course it did. Like, I've seen Body of Lies. Like, it's Body of Lies is not like one of Russell Crowe's or Leonardo DiCaprio's like high top 10 performances of all time. And why? Because it's exactly like this. Like this movie is just mundane. Like it,
it doesn't show the awesomeness of the United States military. It attempts to, like, when they first start the mission and, like, you get these guys, uh-oh, we got an angry bulldog here. We first start the mission, it's okay. when the mission first starts, like, that was a, like, that's the recruitment video for the United States military right there. They're kicking ass. They're sniping people. They got the drones going in there. And I'm like, okay, so this is going to be this. And then it just, as the movie progresses, it just continues to show, like shit on the United States, like, military's, like, ability to be successful. That was also that, like, tonal shift that was like, well, dude, you started out with showing how awesome it is. And then it's like this entire like drone outpost is distracted by a bowl game. They're all watching TV and they're distracted by the bowl game. And then they get mad at Russell Crowe because he wants to stay longer, but they don't want to pay him overtime. Really? That's the reason for pulling Crowe from the chair? Like, so, okay, so the United States military budgets when it comes to people stranded behind enemy lines? Okay, listen, got it.
I have several relatives who are in the military. All this checks out, unfortunately. Like, all this sounds about right to me. So I, no point did it, like, take me out of the movie. I was like, yeah, this is how it works. And for me, one thing I want to point out, though, I do think the direction filmmaking in this at times is pretty awesome. The scene where he's being shoved in the tub and a bomb and the fire goes over the water, some of the slow motion techniques in this where they ramp up, you know, the film camera, I think was beautiful, like in a beautiful, chaotic action way. As somebody who loves action films, I hate poorly directed action movies. I hate them. Like when I watched Argylle, I hated it because none of the action felt visceral, felt well choreographed. It looked like a cartoon. Watching this was like a breath of fresh air because he really was using a lot of great camera techniques with ramping up the camera and other tricks. And it really all comes down to editing, composition, and, you know, camera work. And I think when it came to the actionness, it was really impressive. Like, if another director directed this and didn't bring all that craftsmanship, I don't think I would have liked this movie as much. But because of how impressed I was with the directing, it really kind of impressed me. And I would like to see this guy make another action film with maybe a better cast and a better budget.
And a better script. Some of the dialogue is awful in this movie.
And you may talk shit about the dialogue, but let me tell you this, man. When both of those guys find out they're from Ohio and he's walking through a war zone and he goes, OH, IO, people from Ohio would do that shit in the middle of a war zone. That is real life, buddy, right there.
Let me ask you this. If they were both from Texas, do you think he would have went, the stars at night shine big and bright, Liam Hemsworth in the jungle would have clapped deep in the heart of Texas? No.
Okay. Well, people from Texas are stupid. He would have given ways.
Well, we were the number one podcast in Texas until that comment.
I'm talking about Texas fans, not actual people from Texas.
Yeah, it didn't work for me. Like I said, I love a good military movie. I really do. I love a good, like, wartime movie. This just felt too similar to too many things I've seen. There wasn't anything original about it. And then, I mean, you've heard enough of my criticisms of this movie. It just didn't work. But I do agree. Like, I would like to see more of Milo. I hope he gets himself something action related. Like, the dude was acting his heart out even to the very end when he is brutally murdered. Like, he was the bright spot in this. I cared nothing for Liam Hemsworth or Luke Hemsworth or whichever Hemsworth we had on screen, both of them. I cared nothing about his character. There was zero character development about that with that guy. It all centered around Russell Crowe. I think the movie should have just simply been featured with Russell Crowe.
Yeah, I do think, again, I said this at the beginning of the review, I think Liam is serviceable. He gets the job done, but he doesn't really bring anything to the table. I think if you had a better actor in there with more charisma and, you know, just better presence, I think this would have put the movie on a higher grade, letter grade for me, honestly. But he is serviceable, and that's, you know, it's not bad. At least he's not detracting from the movie. He's just not adding to it. To me, the director, the action, the choreography is the star of this movie. I'm a big fan of military, you know, movies, because one of the movies, a movie like this is, I think, you know, a movie like Behind Enemy Lines, it's one of those films where when I watch it, like another film I really enjoy, The Gray, where it's about somebody crashing and surviving. I enjoy watching the movie and thinking to myself, like, what would I do in this situation? Are there moments of tension? And there were several moments in this movie where when he's under the water bank and the dog starts coming to him, I was like, this shit's intense. Like, what's going to happen here? And there were several times in this movie where I didn't know what was going to happen next. Like, I was, the movie wasn't like paint by numbers to the point where I was like, oh, this is what's going to happen here. When he got caught and Milo got killed, like, I was like, holy shit, where's this movie going? When he's getting tortured, the last thing I expected for was them to actually bomb the compound for him to survive. That scene at the end where they're going through the tunnels, they're shirtless, they're bloody, they're sweaty, and they're just trying to survive. I was like, this is pretty intense and cool. Is it a little ridiculous that he had to like use a phone to call Russell Crowe? But man, when Russell Crowe's racing to get home, and to me, the payoff of smashing that TV with a golf club after he told them, like, he is a veteran. He is somebody who's been working this for a long time, and he is sick of these fucking younger guys who only care about their basketball game. I love that moment when he crashed the TV with a golf club, because I would have done the same damn thing. So movie worked for me, and I think it could have been better. I think if they had a better lead actor, it could have been better. But honestly, I was totally fine with the effects, the action choreography, the violence. I thought it was all really well done. Again, not the most original movie, but if you're looking for like a military action film that's hard R, I would totally recommend this to somebody.
I'm with JT. I think it's a above average VOD. Like, you know, if you have A-list and you're bored on a Wednesday, you go see it, you walk away smiling. So I enjoyed it.
I understand why this movie went straight to Netflix and why it bombed at the box office.
Wait, it didn't go to Netflix, did it?
It's one of those streaming channels.
I don't think it's streaming for free right now. I think you have to actually rent it. So it probably will end up on Netflix or Prime or one of those. But right now, I think you either have to rent it or you have to see it in theaters. So, but if it does hit streaming, definitely check it out.
Russell Crowe, please, please, please negotiate with somebody. Just give me a sequel to The Nice Guys. I just want to see you back in that role. I love that movie so much. I love you in that role. Stay away from movies where the final line in the movie is, well, you're going to have to learn how to twerk. Well, I think we've all said our piece.
He's dropping the mic with that one.
I'm going well to, because, yeah, I mean, come on, man. Like, you watched the same movie I did. That's how the movie ended.
But that is, like, one line. That's not what I'm going to this movie for. I'm going for the 95 minutes of action, which delivers.
Let me correct you on that. That is 43 and a half minutes, because the other 43 and a half minutes are Russell Crowe shopping in a vegan store.
It's like four minutes in the movie.
Well, let's get our final thoughts in. I'm done shitting on the movie. It just wasn't for me. I love that you guys loved it that much. I'm obviously pushing you guys because I love to push your guys' buttons. But yeah, the movie didn't work for me. Listen, if you want to just turn off your brain and go see things blow up, there's plenty of that in this movie. If you like movies where you need to completely suspend belief in order to get through it, you will love this movie. Haas out. JT, final thoughts.
I'll say I don't think you have to suspend your disbelief. I don't think there's anything in this movie that was like completely out of control. Probably the biggest thing where I was scratching my head was when he survived the bombing of the compound. But you know what? It was an awesome sequence, the way they filmed it with him underwater, the fire coming over slow motion. And that's what I'll come down to. I think this is a really well-directed movie. Does it have the strongest script? Probably not. Does it have the strongest lead actor? No. I do think Russell Crowe is actually really good in this, and I think he's the best thing in it. But that's next to the action and the violence. And I love Rocky Jr. Milo. I thought he was awesome in this. I wish he was the lead. But yeah, I think if you like a good action movie that doesn't feel like it was just something lazy and put together, I think this is a really good action military thriller.
So, like, The Beekeeper came out, you know, earlier this month, late last month, and it's of a similar DNA, just less absurd. So, like, if you had fun with The Beekeeper, this is a slightly more serious version of that kind of movie. And you'll like this one. I enjoyed both. And, you know, I would watch it again. Probably will at some point here in a year or two.
All right, folks. Well, we are going to wrap it up. We thank you, as always, for tuning in. I want to give my love. I know I'm talking a lot of shit, but I'll give my love to JT and Benny. Love you guys a lot. We finally get to review a very big, much-anticipated movie next week, and that will be Dune. We are planning on having a special guest. We'll let you tune in next week to figure out who that special guest will be. But, gentlemen, it's always a pleasure to do this with you guys. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.